The tension of several weeks at last broke, and he slept. Krydike's breath gathered in glistening condensation on the ceiling bulkhead. The breeze from a nearby air duct brushed the droplets, which shuddered, then fell on the water like gentle rain. When the image of Ignacio Metz formed a meter to his right, Krydike was slow to become aware.
"Captain," the image said, "I'm calling from the bridge. I'm afraid the Galactics have found us here sooner than we expected."
Krydike ignored the little voice that tried to call him back to deeds and battles. He lingered in a waving forest of kelp fronds, listening to long night sounds. Finally, it was Nukupai herself who nudged him from his dream. Fading beside him, she gently reminded, "Duty, duty, honor is, honor, Krydike, alertly shared is, honor." Nukupai alone might speak primal to Krydike with impunity. He could no more ignore the dream goddess than his own conscience. One eye at last focused on the hologram of the insistent human, and the words penetrated.
"Thank you, Dr. Metz," he sighed. "Tell Takata Jim I'll be right there. And please, page Tom Orley. I'd like to see him on the bridge. Krydike out."
He inhaled deeply for a few moments, letting the room come back into shape around him. Then he twisted and dove to retrieve his harness. Chapter 5 Tom Orley. A tall, dark-haired man swung one-handed from the leg of a bed that was bolted to the floor in an upside-down room. The floor slanted over his head. His left foot rested precariously on the bottom of a drawer pulled from one of the inverted wall cabinets. At the sudden yellow flash of the alert light, Tom Orley whirled and grabbed at his holster with his free hand. His needler was half drawn before he recognized the source of the disturbance, cursed slowly, and reholstered the weapon. Now what was the emergency? He could think of a dozen possibilities offhand, and here he was, hanging by one arm in the most awkward part of the ship.
"I initiate contact, Thomas Orley."
The voice seemed to come from above his right ear. Tom changed his grip on the bed leg to turn around. An abstract three-dimensional pattern swirled a meter away from his face, like multicolored motes caught in a dust devil.
"I suppose you would like to know of the cause of the alarm. Is this correct?"
"You're damn right I do," he snapped. "Are we under attack?"
"No." The colored images shifted. "This ship is not yet assailed, but Vice Captain Takata Jim has announced an alert. At least 5 intruder fleets are now in the neighborhood of Kithrop. These squadrons appear now to be in combat not far from the planet."
Orley sighed. So much for quick repairs and a getaway. He hadn't thought it likely that their hunters would let them escape again. The damaged streaker had left a noisy trail, slipping away from the confusion after the ambush at Morgren. Tom had been helping the crew in the engine room repair Streaker's stasis generator. They had just finished the part calling for detailed hand-eye work, and the moment had come to steal away to a deserted section of the dry wheel, where the NIS computer had been hidden. The dry wheel was a band of workrooms and cabins that spun freely when the ship was in space, providing pseudo-gravity for the humans aboard. Now it lay still, this section of upside-down corridors and cabins abandoned in the inconvenient gravity of the planet. The privacy suited Tom, though the topsy-turvy arrangement was irksome.
"You weren't to announce yourself unless I switched you on manually," he said. You were to wait for my thumbprint and voice ID before letting on you were anything but a standard comm. The swirling patterns took on a cubist style. The machine's voice sounded unperturbed. Under the circumstances, I took the liberty. If I erred, I am prepared to accept discipline up to level 3. Punishment of a higher order will be considered unjustified and rejected with prejudice. Tom allowed himself an ironic smile. The machine would run him in circles if he let it, and he would gain nothing by asserting his titular mastery over it. The Timbrimey spy who had lent the NIS to him had made it clear that the machine's usefulness was based upon its flexibility and initiative, however irritating it became. I'll take the level of your error under advisement, he told the NIS. Now, what can you tell me about the present situation?
A vague question. I can access the ship's battle computers, but that might entail an element of risk.
No, you'd better not do that quite yet. If the NIS tried to inveigle the battle computer during an alert, Krydike's bridge crew might notice. Tom assumed Krydike knew about the presence of the NIS aboard his ship, just as the captain knew that Gillian Baskin had her own secret project. But the Dolphin commander kept quiet about it, leaving the two of them to their work.
All right, then. Can you patch me through to Gillian?
The holo danced with blue specks.
She is alone in her office. I am placing the call.
The motes suddenly faded, replaced by the image of a blonde woman in her early 30s. She looked puzzled briefly, then her face brightened with a brilliant smile. She laughed.
Ah, visiting your mechanical friend, I see. Tell me, Tom, what does a sarcastic alien machine have that I don't? You've never gone head over heels so literally for me.
Very funny. Still, her attitude relieved his anxiety. He had been afraid they would be in combat almost immediately. In a week or so, Streaker might be able to make a good accounting of herself before being destroyed or captured. Right now, she had all the punch of a drugged rabbit.
I take it the Galactics aren't landing yet.
Gillian shook her head.
No, though McAnee and I are standing by in the infirmary just in case. Bridge crew says at least 3 fleets have popped into space nearby. They immediately started having it out, just like at Morgren. We can only hope they'll annihilate each other.
Not much hope of that, I'm afraid.
Well, you're the tactician of the family. Still, it might be weeks before there is a vector to come down after us. There will be deals and last-minute alliances. We'll have time to think of something.
Tom wished he could share her optimism. As the family tactician, it was his job to think of something.
Well, if the situation's not urgent...
You can spend a while longer with your roomie there, my electronic rival. I'll get even by going intimate with Herbie.
Tom could only shake his head and let her have her joke. Herbie was a cadaver, their one tangible prize from the derelict fleet. Gillian had determined that the alien corpse was over 2 billion years old. The ship's mini-library seemed to have seizures every time they asked what race it once belonged to.
Tell Krydike, I'll be right down, okay?
They're waking him now. I'll tell him I last saw you hanging around somewhere.
She gave a wink and switched off. Tom watched the place where her image had been, and once again wondered what he had done to deserve a woman like her.
Out of curiosity, Thomas Orley, I am interested in some of the undertones of this last conversation. Am I right in assuming that some of these mild insults Dr. Baskin conveyed fell into the category of affectionate teasing? My Timbrimey builders are telepathic, of course, but they also seem to indulge in this pastime. Is it part of a mating process, or is it a friendship test of some sort?
A little of both, I guess.
Do the Timbrimi really do the same sort of